Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
All right, and welcome back to the House of Mystery. Of course, I'm Al Warren, and Dave Martino is here, and we've got the guest. And the newest book, Deadly Tides. It's a Misty Pines mystery. And this is book two of the series. So we're going to talk to the author,
Mary Kelly Ikoa. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Appreciate it.
Well, so Mary, you haven't been a lifelong writer, right? This is like your second book in the series. You haven't been writing for your whole life. This is something that you just recently sort of got into, right?
Well, not necessarily. I actually started writing when I was 27, which was, about 30 some plus years ago or so.
Wow.
Yeah. So I actually have another series out, but I started writing at 27, and I wrote until I was 35, and then I stopped for a little bit to open a company with my husband, and we did that for 15 years before I was able to come back to my writing. I turned 50, and I thought, now's about the time to do this if I'm going to do this. And so I had my first series published, and now this is my second series, so...
So why crime? Like, why crime, murder, and mystery and all that? Is that something you have a real passion for? Or?
Yeah, well, I spent 18 years in the legal field. That was my day job before I, right out of high school, actually. I was a paralegal, and I worked for lawyers, yes. And condolences, no. No, it was actually a great, playground and a learning ground of, what justice is and how the system works. I really found it intriguing. I've always kind of had that lean into, justice and finding out, who did it and that type of thing. So it was just a natural progression into murder mystery. It's also what I read. I loved Mary Higgins Clark and lots of different crime novelists at the time. And yeah, so it just kind of gravitated towards it.
Just kind of what felt right. I guess that would be a big advantage too, in a sense, because a lot of times crime mystery writers, especially in fiction, they have to go out looking and researching to find out how things go in the legal system. And you kind of have the experience of being in it. So, I mean, you know a lot of the process, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, I still have police officers that I talk to quite regularly and different people in the industry. My sister's still in the legal field as a paralegal. So I have people I can always chat with. But yeah, I do have a very general, you know, basic knowledge of it and just how it works and the mentality and the personalities that go into it all. So it's been good to draw from that.
Yeah, but talking to police officers when you've been arrested, I don't know if that counts. I don't know, but just saying. Yeah. Well, I guess in a way, you know, you're getting the real deal there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've tried to stay out of the back seat of those cars, you know. I've done pretty well.
Yeah. No, I know I've dealt with a lot, too. I've done a lot of true crime books over my years, and so I know a lot of officers and, you know, prosecutors and detectives and stuff like that I've met. So, yeah, it's a big advantage to know people and to be in it.
Yeah, and just not to feel afraid to even ask. I think that's probably, you know, so many people I know are like, who do I ask? And I'm like, you just pick up a phone and you just call the desk, you know, and you start asking questions. And people are really open to helping you if you're, you know, sincere and polite and, you know, but you just, yeah. Sometimes it's just getting over the own fear of it, of doing something like that. And I just don't have that because I've just worked around people like that, you know, for years. So.
Yeah. And you've met people. I think there's a real separation as well, especially in the last years between law enforcement, let's just say some of the legal side and some common people, let's say just normal people out doing their stuff. It's not a close relationship, let's say, in a lot of areas. So sometimes that is probably a little bit of a hindrance as well. It's just really too bad because most of the time when you're out there and you know police and you know different people in the business, you realize that they're just people and they're trying to do the right thing and help.
Oh, absolutely. They're very, you know, wonderful people. They all have lives and they all want to go home at the end of the day just like the rest of us do. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's too bad that there's sort of a separation there somewhat, you know. When you write this story, so now you've got Sheriff Jax Turner here. So when you've got him, how do you write that character?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was different because my first series was a female. And so, you know, I really had to shift gears a little bit just even to write a male character. You know, I think I really drew a lot upon my history with military men in my life and lawyers and just different men that I've met. They're very tenacious and very, you know, just know how to get it done type of personalities. And I just can just pull from that and use that a lot as the basis and the inspiration for the character.
Yeah. It's probably quite a few different people you've worked and met over the years. It's kind of like just a amalgamation of them all, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And I worked retail, you know, so the company that my husband and I started was in retail too. And so if that doesn't give you a whole array of personalities on a daily basis, you know, that there's just so much to draw from. And I think as a writer, that's what you do. You just observe and you pull and you just create character from all of your life experience.
Well, can you hear Jax? Can you in your other characters and even your prose, or do you have another way?
Oh no, I can hear him. I can hear his voice. I can visualize him very easily. Yeah, and actually, you know, this is kind of one of these asides. You know, I envision Gerard Butler playing the part in a movie someday, and so I oftentimes can really like get into that, you know, character of like what that would look like.
Well, I'll give you his phone number. If you know. He might say no. He's a wild man.
You know. Oh, yes.
Just so you know. Well, yeah, but when you say you hear, so do you have a conversation with your character, or how do you actually write the dialogue? Are you sitting there and then the characters just sort of do it? Do you see it like a movie, or do you actually tell your characters what to do?
Oh, no, I try to listen as much as I can. Usually if I'm in the scene, I've kind of stepped into that person's character and I'm writing it as I'm typing it. It's just kind of like, that's what I think this person's going to be saying right here and now. Like I can just hear his response to things. And I can hear the other characters' responses too, because, you know, I do quite a bit of characters research prior to going in. So I know my characters pretty well, what they like, what they don't like, what their triggers could be. And so, you know, that just kind of all just comes through. And I am a pantser. Like, I work best with my fingers moving. So I just kind of listen and just type.
Does your husband fear you then hearing these voices? Does he sort of have to you know, keep you alarmed in case you get up in the middle of the night or something?
It's funny. He usually tells people, well, he tells people a couple of things. He always says, she murders me on the first page, which is not true, that I do not do that. And then I practice all of my, you know, moves on him, you know, like how long does it take for a person to turn blue and things like this. And I,
oh, nice.
And he's a Hawaiian. So, you know, this is not an easy task. So, yeah, no, he likes to tease. But.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I don't, of course.
Yeah, she's choking him. Happy Thanksgiving.
Was that how you create your action scenes? Did you act it out? Or is it something more that you're just going through in your mind? How do you do it?
I do both, right? So some stuff seems instinctual. You know, if somebody's coming at you with a fist, you know, you're going to sidestep or you're going to do whatever. Some things I've had to act out in some of my books. I had a character in a room that she was locked in, and how would she get out? And, you know, a lot of times we'll use my husband on this. I'll say, okay, so we're in the room and I need to get out of here. So what are some things that I can start doing? And so I'll start visualizing before I write the scene, just so I can, you know, get some ideas. But usually I just kind of write it and then I go back and see if it makes sense later whenever I have to do the research.
Yeah. And take him to the hospital, of course.
Yeah. After the stitches and everything.
Yeah. After the stitches you can eat. Yeah, how do you write the killer then? The bad person, the person that's causing the big problem or the doing the real evil thing in a book.
Yeah. Well, I find what their motivation is, right? Because they can't be cardboard cut out. You know, they need to have a reason and they have to have a good side. You know, I always say, you know, their mother loved them, I'm sure, at some point. You know, we all come in as babies. And, you know, so you're always looking for that human side of them as well. But then, you know, they have a very twisted view of the world, and that's what I'm playing on, right? So I don't write senseless killers. Like, my killers have to have a reason. There has to be some sort of motivation that has led them to where they're at. And so I work just kind of creating that before I start building the story.
Yeah, I guess in a way, because in order to make them real, you sort of have to get into why they think what they're doing is good, mm-hmm. or why they think it's important. Because quite often the bad guy doesn't think that they're bad. They live in a world where they think they're doing something good, you know?
Yeah, or they're really just acting out. A lot of my characters have gone through grief, or they're, you know, they're broken in some way. And so they are, you know, looking to heal that part of them, like in a really twisted way, right? Or to make things right, even though the whole world is like, that's totally wrong. You know, that's not how you make things right at all, you know? So, yeah. But you got to give them, you know, logical motivation, at least logical to them. And, you know, and then send that out through the book, right? You know, have your little things you weave in and all of that.
Right. Right. Now, are you conscious? Are you thinking about how you write violence or the bad scenes? Or do you kind of stay away from that in the books?
Yeah, I don't do graphic violence at all. So I am conscious of that. I always feel like I don't like to read too graphic. I like to sleep at night. So, you know, I don't go too crazy. So I'm pretty conscious about not going too bloody or, you know, too graphic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably better that way, you know. If you're not comfortable writing it, it wouldn't come out very good if you were, you know, doing that.
You can turn on the news too and see how.
Yeah, you want to get depressed. Turn on the news for 20 minutes and then you'll be back in it. So when you put together this book, you said you're a pantser, so you haven't got this outlined. You haven't got this all decided, okay, this is where it starts, this is where it's going to go, this is what's going to happen, and this is how it ends. Or do you? Or is it just completely one as it goes?
So in Deadly Tides in particular, I knew that I wanted to play with the idea of severed feet. So I knew that part of the book. Like, I want to have severed feet washing ashore in the Pacific Northwest. It's a phenomenon that actually happens, and it's intrigued me for a long time. So, like, in this case, I knew that that was the element that I was going to be tying into the book. And so usually I start with that type of, you know, inspiration. And then, of course, I know who my characters are. And so, you know, it's really like, well, we've got severed feet. Now where do we go from here? How it ends, I never really know for sure until I get to about the two-thirds part. I basically know who the killer is usually, though. But usually it could go a couple of directions as well. So I kind of surprise myself at the end, just like I do. And then I have to go back and fix when I do the edits. Like, so if I think I know who it is, but I change it, then I just have to go strengthen that a little bit throughout the edits. But it's always all there. So It works for me for some reason. I tried to plot, but it does not work for me.
Yeah. The foot thing is really good because I only have to drop in one every 6 months in the ocean here.
Great. Okay.
Oh, in the same vein of writing by the seat of your pants, have your characters ever surprised you while you're writing? Do they kind of take the plot off the rails, making it difficult for them, for you yourself, to kind of stay on track with getting to that ending that you start to envision?
That's a good question. Not usual. I mean, usually they act pretty good and pretty normal to their character, not too often. I would say in the first book in the series, which actually was inspired by a true event in my hometown, the characters at the end kind of surprised. And, I was like, that we'll put that in there because that seems like that would work. And I was a little surprised that we'd gone down that direction. But, at the end, it all kind of works itself out. So occasionally, I will say occasionally they surprise me. But usually, by the time I'm halfway through, I know where I'm going with the book. And so.
What you do, I wonder here now. So when you are going through your characters and what they go through, you're beating up your husband to try different moves and you're doing all this stuff and you're going through the murder and then the afterwards and whatever else you have to go through and stuff. When you finish the book and it's completed and sent to the publisher and stuff like that, do you look back and do you think living through your characters for the year or however long it took you to write it sort of changed you in any way?
I think each book that I write makes me a little bit better writer because I'm becoming deeper into character, which I love character-driven novels. So, that makes me happy that I'm strengthening. I will say sometimes I look back and I'll read some of my book and I'll be like, well, I don't even hardly remember writing that, but that's not bad, So I think sometimes it gives me more confidence. Every book I write is, adds a little confidence, like I can get it done. As a writer, I think we all kind of hit those walls of like, wow, I don't even know how to write a novel here at this point. we all hit brick walls. So it's kind of that satisfaction of, that I know what I'm doing a little bit. So, okay, I think I can do another one.
Right. Yeah. I know it's the ups and downs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you put in a subtext? Is there a meaning? Is there something underlying the story? Is there something you want the reader to take away from each of your books when you write them?
Well, I think, a lot of my characters are dealing with grief. And I think one of the things that is that you can move past it and move through it. I think that tends to be a pervasive theme. It's kind of a life theme for me. So I think I put it in my books. I'm not sure it'll always be in all my books, but I will say that the last two series, my characters, one was dealing with the death of a father. In Jax Turner's case, he's dealing with the death of his daughter to leukemia and his marriage to FBI agent Abby Kanekoa. So I think, some of that is one of those things. And I always feel like if one person gets something from that, I help somebody and that's a good day, right? That's the highest level of compliment, I think, is if somebody sees something and can move past something for themselves. So.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's important. It's making changes and representing. If someone gives you a bad review, you can always just hunt them down and try out some of your moves, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I try not to read the reviews.
Yeah. It's actually probably better, because it just kind of, it throws you off what you're doing, right?
Yeah. It's very subjective too. I mean, one person's gold is another person's, whatever. It's just, yeah. So I think it's subjective, and you just try to keep doing what you're doing, getting better.
Yeah.
Keep telling your stories.
Yeah, because I gave up after – I remember reading a review, and they give you a 5-star, and the next one gave me a 1, said it wouldn't pass grade 10 English. And, you kind of go, wow.
I know.
So it's so perspective.
Perfect. Yes, it's all
– Well, it's just like how it can be complete opposite from two different people, and you're like, wow. So I guess it's really about their – perspective of where they're at and what they're doing at the time and how they feel or who knows.
Oh, absolutely. We all view the world through our lens, right, of our experience. So, yeah, if you're having a bad day and you're reading something that's not, what you want, could be a bad review, but has nothing to do with you at all. So,
yeah, 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 it's more about them. So I pretty much ignore it. Look at the overall numbers, and that's good enough.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
better that way.
I like to read the 5 stars, though. I mean, you know, I won't lie that there's a few. If I see a 5 star, I'll be like, oh, okay, well, oh, what'd they say?
Yes. Oh, so I don't even touch it. I go to the Goodreads or whatever, and I'll look, and it'll be like the overall. You know, if there's like 1,000 reviews, and if it's a 4 star overall, good enough.
Good enough. I like
it. Walk away. You know what I mean? I
don't mean to. Walk away.
Well, you know, walk away, because that's great. That means out of that many people that actually wrote, you're doing 4 out of 5. And I think I'm a 2 star. You know what I mean? Because I look at, and I don't mean that badly. I just mean that there's so many, you know, Hemingway, and there's all these great 5 star writers. I don't put myself in that category. So if I can get a 4.
Yeah.
My God, you know, that's great.
That's right.
So good enough.
I think I'll adopt that. Yeah. Good thing to adopt.
Yeah. Well, it's just because it's good enough. I don't need to get into that sort of. So now this is book 2. Do you plan on going either even further with this, or are you going to, you know, the Misty Pines mystery? So are you planning on going several books, or is this it?
No, I definitely have a third book planned. I'm about 20 pages into that at this point. Killer Tracks is the name of that book. So definitely a third book. I do have a standalone coming next year with another publisher. So, you know, I am writing other books, other standalones. So I'm kind of juggling a few things. But I love this character. And I grew up at the Oregon coast. So I love, you know, the setting of this book and of the series. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think I will always try to produce a book out of it, just because of my love of the character and the setting. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Trying to juggle a few things at the moment. There's one of me and lots of stories in my head. And
it's a balancing act when you're trying to do it all and make it so that one doesn't interfere with the other. Right.
You know? Yes. And keeping it fresh, right? Keeping the stories fresh, the modes of murder, the characters. You don't want things to start sounding too much alike. And that can happen, I think, for me, if I'm doing too much at one time, it's, you know, start stealing ideas from this to do that. And you're like, no, we want to keep this all fresh.
Well, with the series that you write, how do you keep track of continuity? Do you have a series Bible? Do you have a system of some sort? How do you do it?
Yeah, so I do a notebook for each book that I'm writing so that I keep a lot of that information front and center, so I can always go back and read it to see, you know, eye color, you know, everything, really, you know, character. I reread the character sketches to make sure that things, you know, are staying true. And then I always read the book right before, you know, I start the next project. So like in this book, I've been reading Deadly Tides as in preparation to write the third book so that I can keep the tone also going of the series and the characters and the relationships.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that what you, when you say keep it fresh and doing book to book, are you thinking more about, does each book really tackle on your characters and it's more about their change and what they go through and how they develop it through the book?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it kind of more the angle than,
Yeah, keeping them and their motivations and their responses to things, you know, you want to keep it all moving forward, right? Not unless you do want to stick them in a particular place, but then that's something to be explored as well, right? That they're stuck. And so how do they move out of that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there can be plenty of ways to go. Because it must be really difficult. I know we've had people on, like, you know, you get like James Patterson and stuff and they have like book 30. You know, of a series. And I was like, holy cow. I don't want to say you're beating it to death, but how can you keep it going, right? That's got to be you know, with him, he keeps them the same age too, right? So which is, in some cases, right? Whereas like Connolly ages the people.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it's just how you want to do it. Yeah, interesting.
Hugh Grafton did the same thing with her characters. She just stayed in the 80s and never progressed really much in age, you know, the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, I get, you know, you can, I can do it either way. I just think, wow, it's, but you don't want to get in. Do you write in first person then, or how do you, from what point of view are you writing?
I do both. So in, The Misty Pines is a third person. My first series, the Pruitt series, is a first person. Yeah, so I do both. I like both of them equally well, really. It's just what feels right for the story, I guess, at the time. And I never really know for sure until I start the story if I want to be in the head of the character or if I think a little bit more off, you know, a little bit more distant.
Yeah.
But I like third person close too. So, you know, you're still kind of writing in that first feeling, but in third.
Yeah. So, okay. So now does each book have to be read in order? Like, do you need to do one, or can someone just pick up Deadly Tides and if they like it, go back to book one?
Yeah, no, everything is written as a standalone. I always try to add enough information in each of the novels so that if you did just pick up Deadly Tides, you'd get enough of the backstory. Although I always say the first book is the place to start, of course, because it really gives you all the history, really dives into all of that. But no, you don't need to if you don't want to.
Yeah, no, it's important to go through the series if you like the book that you're reading, because then you learn about how they got there more and stuff like that. I think it's important. Yeah. Well, so now at the end of the day here, where do you see yourself going?
You know, just keeping the stories flowing, hopefully will continue, and just continuing to write more Jacks and more standalones. And I'm not really slowing down. We just sold our company, so I am fully retired. And this is what I do now for my day job. So I'm lucky in that way. I get to write full time, and that's what I intend to do. So just keep producing.
Oh, so do you actually, can you do it that way? Can you go, okay, well, Monday to Friday and sit down, go 9 to 5 and just there and turn it on? Or do you have to be in a certain frame of mind or certain time or something like that?
Well, I'm a morning writer, so I tend to write from like 7 in the morning till about 11 or 12 these days. And then I'm done for the day. And I show up at the same time every day, like habit. Maybe it's from all those years working in law offices or, you know, owning a company. You just show up every day and it's the routine. So I take my writing like a business. And so I sit down the same time every day and I do it. I take Sundays off. Saturdays I do, you know, a little bit of editing here and there. But yeah, no, I show up every day. Even if I don't produce a ton of work, at least I'm there. It's the action of being there. And sometimes it's just editing. Sometimes it's fresh writing. Sometimes it's a little marketing, you know, the business, right? It's I'm there to do whatever shows up.
And you stop at noon so you can have your martini lunches, like?
That's right. You know, it's called that marriage thing, right? I'm one of these obsessive people. I could probably write all day, but, you know, I have been married for almost 35 years and want to keep that. So got to have balance in everything. So I stop at noon and we go play.
Well, good. I mean, you have to keep living, right? You have to keep doing all that stuff, right?
And
where do you get your little characters or your side characters? Do you just sort of go out and watch people in a coffee shop and kind of do that, or?
Yeah, that, or just from, you know, characters that I've enjoyed, you know, like Trudy, like I liked Longmire a lot, and Secretary Ruby. And so, you know, Trudy has a little bit of that, you know, old school, no nonsense sort of thing. So sometimes it's just, you grab it from anywhere, really, you know, just from people that kind of speak to you on some level, whether it's in a coffee shop or a show you've watched or whatever. I just kind of pull all of that in, and Jax, of course, needs to be, you know, wrangled every so often. So he needed a character like that. And so I kind of find the right character for the moment or for the scene or for the book that needs to happen.
Well, I know you have a couple subplots in Deadly Tides. How do you develop your subplots?
A lot of times they just kind of develop on their own. You know, they just kind of show up as, you know, sometimes they're red herrings that, you know, we need to kind of move through, and it becomes kind of this thing on its own. It's very organic. I don't necessarily know what that's going to be when I first start. Yeah. I wish I had a more, you know, fancy answer.
Is that it? What? No. So, listen, have you ever killed off someone you know in your book?
Not yet.
Not yet. See, this, yeah. So we've got possibilities here.
Always.
Any names you want to name? We can get them on the other line. And
I'll take the fifth on that.
Yeah, I'll take the fifth. There you go. Wow, that's interesting. So listen, are you doing social media then with your marketing? Do you have a website? How do you like people to find you?
Yeah, so marykillyecoa.com is my website, and I have all my links there, but I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Instagram, and Twitter a little bit, but not TikTok. You will not find me on TikTok.
Oh, come on. Get on TikTok. Start dancing and doing stuff. Come on. Have some fun. Why not?
I know. But
live on the edge.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I just like to put my characters on the edge. I like to stay back a little ways.
Well, just get someone that, just put your dog or cat or go get, you know, an animal and just have them dance and hold your book.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. I'd rather be writing. That's the sad thing, right? There's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah, that's true. You know, what can I say? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we'll have all of that up on our website too, so people can find you with one click. They find you easily and hunt you down and give you a review and say what they're going to say and stuff like that. And did you, it's funny, but do things affect you? Did you write some of even the first book, I guess, rather than the second one during the pandemic and stuff? And did that sort of affect the way you wrote the book, do you think?
Yeah, that's interesting because I actually had a series debut. That my debut was during the pandemic, May of 2020. So I was writing this series at the same time as I was finishing up the second book in that series. But it didn't really slow me down. And in some ways, our company was one of those essentials. So we kept running our company. So I was still working, and life was actually very much similar to what it was after the pandemic is tight. So it didn't really affect me too much. I just kept to my routine and kept writing. And
But the weirdness around, you know, the people acting weird and all the issues surrounding it and the darkness and all the negativity and stuff. Do you think that seeps into the writing when you're writing?
Probably to some degree. I mean, yeah, I had 35 employees. I was trying to keep healthy and, you know, so I was kind of juggling a lot of stuff during some of that. But yeah, I think it did probably to some degree. But I just stayed focused. It was really nice to have something to focus on. I feel bad for the people that kind of got put away and locked in and couldn't get out, and that feels dark, right? But I was lucky enough to be able to keep a routine, and I had employees to manage and books to write. So some of it did, I'm sure, but I didn't know. Yeah. I also didn't have time for it in some ways, right? I just kept moving.
I think stuff like that will come out. You'll notice it more in your writing maybe in 10 years when you look back. You might see something or notice something. And I think it's something we notice in the future. You know.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And I'm actually working on a book right now, drafting a book that kind of touches on the pandemic. So, you know, that time frame. So I think there's, you know, having to weave it into current novels, you know, unless you set them into a different time. I think that's going to be something we'll see quite a bit, too.
Well, you know, and personally, I like being locked away into the dark. It's safer for everyone, you know.
Gotcha. Good to know.
Yeah, it's just better to have my dog and be happy.
And, yeah,
you know.
It is.
Well, this has been a pleasure. So now the book, Deadly Tides, it's a Misty Pines mystery, and it's book 2 of 2 so far. So Mary Kelly Ecoa, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com. houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.